greetings, cyberspace, and welcome to episode 264 of the Double Density Podcast with your host, Bernie and Angelo. Double Density is your home to tech tales and paranormal. Prior to the first things first, Angelo, I want to read a bit of listener mail.
Okay, great.
That is addressed to you, not to me.
To me, specifically. Okay.
Yes, from listener Danny.
Okay.
So Danny says, hey guys, I totally forgot to write to you in the wake of your latest episode, which dropped on March 13th. So this is a week and change back, in which Angelo broached the subject of e-readers. He needs to try one. They do not at all offer the same type of reading experience tablets such as iPads do. They're much more akin to actual books than tablets ever will be. They don't ever tire the eyes, and most have a setting that makes the backlight switch to orange hues before bedtime. There's also the possibility to enjoy them without a backlight at all, meaning you have to use the same lighting you would when reading a paper book. Not to mention the convenience of being able to store literally thousands of books on a single extremely light device. I hope he does try this one day. I hope he tries this one day. So the only point of contention I have there is that you can actually do the nighttime shift on an iPad too.
Yeah, I just don't like reading on an iPad because you are still getting like the thing. I have thought of the idea of getting a Kindle or equivalent.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I like paper books. Like, it's like a genuine thing. I like having them, but I see the appeal of the Kindle, and it is something that's in like the potential wish list of like maybe a Christmas present or something, or a birthday present. So it's definitely something I've toyed the idea with, but right now I don't have one. For now, I am reading some paper books. And
so this is what's going to happen though. Like 3 weeks from now, you're going to join the podcast. You're going to say nothing, and you're going to go, Brian, guess what? I bought a Kindle. Like digital, like in classic Angelo style. You're going to go radio silent, and then suddenly you'll be like, oh, I got a deal.
Well, speaking of radio silent, I didn't tell you this, but my AirPods Pro broke.
How?
Like there was a warranty repair thing for the static sound?
Yes, because I still have that.
So it was up to 3 years. And I thought mine were 3.5 years old. So it started doing it after, like, of course, after the thing. But then I realized, oh, I got these in 2019. So it's actually 4 and a bit years, like 4.5 years almost. And the static thing went from, okay, occasional, to absolutely unbearable. As soon as I stepped outside and hit any sort of wind, I couldn't hear out of my left ear.
Right, okay.
So I brought it to Apple to see if they could do something, even though I know it's like, I told them, oh, they're 3.5 years old. And he reminded me, no, these are 4.5 years old, but let me see what I can do. Did you know to replace an AirPod, it's $115 per AirPod?
Oh, I believe it.
And he said he could bring it down to 70. So I thought about it and I said, you know what? I use AirPods every day. Like, it's something
to block out the children, the wife.
Yeah. It's not like I can't live without it, but I do use them for my walks. I have the Sonys. We discussed the WXM, whatever they are.
The
like
threes,
Sony,
the fours, yeah.
Start naming stuff. PlayStation 5, great name. W1000MX4s, not as good a name. I love those, but I tried walking with them once my AirPods broke, and I'm not a fan of walking with those.
I won't lie to you. It feels very constricting and weird. I've tried it a couple of times, and I don't love it.
You're a double person too, right? Where you have those and AirPods as well.
Yes.
You're like me.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
AirPods for walking and commuting. The Sonys for sitting at my office and shunning.
I just find that the gap that they create actually, like the airtightness of the actual like headphones does bother me through a time.
Oh, see, though, yeah, so the Sonys don't bother me. These that I'm wearing right now, these Audio-Technica ones, if I were to have to wear them longer than an hour and a half, which I used to bring these to the office and had to remove them, the Sonys, at least the 4s, you have the 3s, I think.
Yeah, I do.
The cushioning on the 4s is unbelievable. It's like you have little clouds on your ears. But still, for walking, not a fan. And I'm happy to report that the AirPods Pro 2, I had some gift certificates that I was able to use, so I didn't pay full price. And I knew I'd have to buy something from Apple, so I'm glad I had those gift certificates. I didn't think that the AirPods Pro active noise cancellation was bad in any way.
Mm-hmm.
These make it sound bad. They are so good.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable how amazing these things sound. And something as weird as there's like an adaptive mode where if there's more noise around you, they get slightly louder. Or if you start talking to someone, they just mute.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear the noise around you. Very impressive, actually.
Yeah.
So 5 stars, the Apple AirPods Pro 2. I know I'm like 3 years late.
I'm glad to hear that, Angela. Let's talk about not being impressed, though. Let's talk about moving from Apple ears to more so Apple eyes. The big news in tech this week, of course, is that it's, you know, U.S. Department of Justice is like, hey, Apple, you're running a monopoly, right? So they filed earlier this week, they filed an 88-page complaint filed by the Department of Justice, joined by 16 states, accusing Apple of basically maintaining a monopoly over their customers.
Yeah, so now the Attorney General, who should have been on the Supreme Court, Merrick Garland, is saying that although monopoly is not necessarily illegal, a monopoly that forces your competitors to not be competitive at all is a problem. And people are comparing this to Microsoft in the mid-90s. And I don't know, like Microsoft had much more of a market share than Apple.
Yeah, they own 90% of the desktop world in the 90s, right?
Yeah. And the Verge article I put in the show notes said at one point in close to 2000, they had 97% of the desktop market.
Yeah, exactly. 2% Macs and 1% running Linux distros, I imagine, right?
Yeah.
A couple of things to note, though, so this is a little bit different in terms of the distribution, right? Because as we all know, worldwide, there are more Android phones than there are iPhones floating around in the world. So what they've done, the Department of Justice has decided to classify the iPhone as a performance phone, not just a smartphone, but a performance phone with some like extra descriptions of like features that set it apart.
So yeah, this DOJ lawsuit, it's a lawsuit, right? They're suing Apple?
Yeah.
Okay. Some of it's good and some of it's dumb.
I agree.
The good is I really like, although I probably wouldn't use it, I think Apple should open up and allow other apps beyond to be sold like beyond the App Store, like we have in the Mac, right? Macs aren't exploding left, right, and center, like because you can. Half the software I'm using now is not from the App Store.
It's all cracked and hacked, right, Angela?
Zero day
exploits, Wares, Juarez, right?
Well, I mean, that's where the problem lies after, right? But like in terms of Macs, they could never say, oh, we're locking down to Mac to the App Store because there would be a revolt and they would lose a lot of market share, basically, because people love that the Mac, you can get apps outside the App Store. Now, they've made things a little more secure in that, you know, if you download an app from anywhere on the internet that's not the App Store, you get a bit of a warning and there's some stuff.
Yeah, you have to fill in an admin code, like your admin password. Yeah.
For example, Audio Hijack, which I'm using right now, actually has this weird step involved where I have to reboot my computer in safe mode to be able to use the audio stuff it does. But once you pass that step, it's okay. And you only have to do it once. And it's only because I'm using an M series Mac. Any other, in the old Intel days, you'd have to do that. And I think that's a good choice, right? The problem I think Apple sees in this, and I understand, although I think I disagree, is that there'll probably be an influx of people with broken iPhones showing up to the Genius Bar saying, oh, I downloaded this app and now my iPhone is like, the camera keeps turning on and spying on me. I don't know why. I wonder if that's their reasoning. I think there's things that they could get around. But there are risks leaving the walled garden of the App Store.
I do think that that is an issue. It's not the issue necessarily, but I think it is an issue that Apple faces when you're talking about, you know, cracked phones. Yeah, I think they're just scared of losing their financial dominance over the entire ecosystem, right?
Yes.
Because like App Store revenue makes them a lot of money.
Definitely. It's not their
for nothing almost, right? Like they do very little lift.
Yeah, they charge people 30% and then at a certain point you go down to 15%, but they have these weird deals with bigger apps, right, where they charge them less. And I think that's the aspect that sours people on this. Because if the App Store wasn't this, I guess greedy would be the right word almost, and the way they treat some of their developers, I think people wouldn't be agreeing with the DOJ here, right? They would say, no, Apple's doing a good thing having a walled garden where I feel safe and all that. But the developers are being treated like garbage.
Well, I was going to say, like, it kind of restricts innovation, right, in terms of different ways. Like, there's certain, you know, Android apps that I think are cool that would fly that they don't want to put through the App Store verification process, right? So
yeah,
I think like
there's
a bit
garbage
of
that does make it through.
No, for sure. And it's a weird kind of like, I know it's like a case by case basis kind of thing, but it's also just super annoying to watch all in the pursuit of increasing value for very little work relatively, right? Because you don't need an army of people continually checking things. You just need a dedicated team to review things. And then after that, you kind of, you know, you make sure that their updates don't break the ecosystem, and you're pretty much good to go. It's not a full-blown service industry response.
Do you ever find yourself looking at what other people have downloaded to their iPhones and quietly judging them for the garbage apps they take?
No, I tend not to stare at people's phones when I'm out in public.
Okay, because on the train sometimes, as I've been taking it now a few times a week, I find myself doing that again and quietly judging on the garbage people use. Also, when I was at the Apple store this week asking to see if they could fix my AirPods Pro, I was listening to people around me and the problems they face with their iPhones. And they are problems we would never face, Brian, unfortunately, because, or fortunately for us, in that, you know, we're sort of in the know in terms of what to do and what not to do with your phone. Like, oh, how do I get all my photos off of this and into Facebook? Well, that's not something really you're supposed to be doing, but I guess you could have booked a Genius appointment for that.
You're just mad that you can't download the beer chugging app on the phone.
I still have it. Oh, yeah. I still have it. It's still, I don't have it, but it's available. So my daughter, I was telling her, like, oh, the only app I really know exactly when I downloaded, because I was at Disney World when I listened to the podcast saying he had shipped something, is Mark Armit's Overcast, right? I was listening to ATP, and he's like, guys, I shipped something. And I was at Disney World, downloaded it right away, switched to Overcast as my podcast player, and haven't looked back since. And I know that was July 2014, because that's when the first year we were at Disney World. And she decided to go through my phone and look at all the apps I've downloaded in the past. And it's really weird. Like, my first app was some sort of weird game in 2008, I want to say.
Do you remember what it was?
I don't remember. I don't remember right now, but it was some sort of weird thing. And it was not for my iPhone at the time. I didn't have one. I got my first iPhone in 2010. That was for my iPod Touch that I got for free with my iMac.
And it's been like, what, like 13, 14 years of just spectacular downloads for Angelo's phone?
Yeah, I'm not, you know me, I'm not a big person of having lots and lots of apps on his phone. And I've cut down significantly more in the past few months. And I really like not using my phone. I have a great iPhone. It's amazing. I love it. Great pictures and stuff. But you know what? I try not to use it. So much so now, like, even as of 9 p.m. now, I'm on Do Not Disturb. And I've started using, we mentioned the orange mode.
Correct.
Stuff. I started using I forget what it's called, daylight or something like that. It's like the eye resting feature, right?
Yeah, where I use it too, screen, after 10 o'clock.
Yeah. And now my phone, I don't even turn on after 10 o'clock. It goes into sleep mode.
So if anyone wants Angelo's phone number to call him after 10 p.m. Eastern, go ahead and DM me.
You have to keep calling, though, because it will not.
Exactly. Just leave a couple of voicemails there. I think there are some good points to this lawsuit and also some dumb ones that I don't particularly agree with.
At all, right? Like, there, if you read between the lines, the DOJ is basically saying, Apple, your stuff's too good. You got to make it less good because you're not letting other people compete. And that's a dumb thing.
Yeah. Like, one of the things that the lawsuit brings up is iMessage functionality. Like iMessage is a USP, right? In marketing, like, a unique selling point. Like, the functions of iMessage, the core functions work via either an iPhone or an Android. You message someone, they get the message, they can respond. All the other stuff, the reactions and things like that, like sharing your location, sure. But at its core, iMessage is for messaging. It's not for stickers.
Exactly. And Apple has said they're going to adopt a new, more rich text messaging format, right, coming this year sometime. And then Android users will be able to react to things, will be able to see typing. Their bubbles will still be green, though. And yeah. It's so funny that, like, the DOJ is arguing green bubbles.
Yeah.
Really?
Literally, yeah. Which I think is, like, the dumb part that they should have left out.
Absolutely. Like, young people want an iPhone. And that's one of their issues, is that to make Apple seem like more of a monopoly, they have to change it to the fact that, no, it's not all smartphones. It's just the really good ones.
Yeah.
You guys are too good in the really good smartphone thing, and you can charge as much as you want, and people will buy it. Yeah, people will buy it because it's good. And if other, like, that, isn't that the point? Like, don't they love capitalism over there?
Okay, so speaking of capitalism, though, another good point, though, is that, Apple Pay, like, Apple collects part of that payment whenever it's made via Apple Pay, right?
So the thing with, I don't know if this is just a U.S. thing, but before we even had Apple Pay, we were able to put our cards in
the wallet.
Yeah, without it necessarily being Apple Pay, right? It's basically the tap and go we have here as part of Interact, which is what the Canadian debit card system is, right? And you could do that. You can tap and pay even with your credit card. And I thought that wasn't necessarily Apple Pay, but am I wrong?
I feel like it's just been folded into it, right? I want to talk about Interact for a sec, because I don't know if our American listeners know this, but it's kind of an insane thing that Canada has, right? It is basically like an infrastructure by which to make debit easier and universal, which is why in Canada we love debit, because it's a standard that is used across all of the major and minor banks here to allow for debit transactions, which is just mind-blowing to Americans, right? Because they have, you know, thousands of banks and other financial institutions who don't have access to this, so they're using cash still or credit mostly because of the fact that the multiplicity of financial institutions there, trying to get them all on board with one standard is just not happening. So I wanted to put that as an aside to people who are not aware, people, you know, in the United States who are listening, who still have to rely on credit and cash. That's mostly why. Or like a service like PayPal.
We don't need Venmo here.
No. I mean, we have it. I have it. I use PayPal.
Do we have Venmo?
Things.
Yes.
I
thought we just sent Interact e-payments.
So Venmo is not available in Canada, but Interact payments are. So sorry, e-transfers
that is
are
what easy. Yeah. So we don't need it. We just, yeah. So like, for example, a good example relevant to the show, when Brian pays for the podcast, because I used to pay for it, then you started a different podcast and we transferred it to you.
Correct.
And now I send you every 3 or 4 months, I think. Yeah, every 3 months, I send you the equivalent of about like $37.50.
Yeah.
And I usually just send it through email, basically.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, it's, and if you have, and you can have something called auto deposit, where if the person has auto deposit, you send the money, it's automatically in their account, no problem.
But yeah, so like, I think that like, so another good part of it is like how Apple Pay is claiming more of its fair share of a transaction.
Yeah, the stuff like that I think is great. I just kind of have a point of contention with Apple making their stuff too attractive to people. Yeah. It's like that is the point of what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Are they being bad actors on some other stuff? Maybe. Like they're not.
I think they are.
I don't think they're like an evil corporation. They're just greedy, and that's part of it.
Well,
and hopefully
Well, so how is greedy not evil?
Okay, yes, it is. I don't think they're like, you know, testing iPhones on animals and murdering them. Like, you know what
Well,
I mean?
No, but there's a question of degrees. That's like a fallacy there, Angelo. That's just,
You know what? I agree.
Okay.
So
you're a rational man. I feel like I can.
Yeah, no, yeah. Greedy is evil, and they're evil in that part.
Yes.
But they make good stuff. And you know what? If this keeps them honest, as long as my next iPhone isn't, like, I hope Tim Cook doesn't come out and say, like, this is the best iPhone ever. And, like, the next year he comes out, this is the second best iPhone ever because the one last year was better because the DOJ screwed us. How do you like them apples, Brian?
Yeah, but I feel like it's very short-sighted, right? Because the only people who will pay for it are the customers who, like, you know, if you're looking at a premium iPhone experience and you get junk, then you're probably going to eye that Android a little more closely next time.
You used to be an Android user. Yeah. I never had an Android phone. I went from having, I think it was like a Windows phone at like my pre-iPhone phone. And before that was, you know, like the Nokias and the old regular.
Yeah, your T9s.
Yeah, those types of phones. And the only quote unquote real smartphone I've had since 2010 has been an iPhone. And you had, I remember what was it called? The Google Droid?
One of the droids.
Yeah, like the 4 or something. And I always thought your phone was kind of cool because when you closed the screen, it went off like a TV.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
An old CRT television.
Exactly, yeah. It was the Droid 4.
Yeah.
But the Motorola, not the other one. Because there's like different, like, there were different, like, the ones that, like, opened up versus the ones that are just, like, the smartphone classic style. And that's the one I had.
And I remember being very happy when I started getting blue bubbles from you.
Yes, you were. I've mentioned this before. I made the switch basically because of the fact that like I work in an Apple ecosystem, so it's easier for all of my devices to talk to each other when I'm transferring files and doing other stuff. Like so in that way, but like I'm much more open to exploring an Android in the future if that, you know, becomes an issue for my ability to enjoy Apple products.
If you had to buy an Android phone right now, which one would you buy?
I would have to go look at the market. It's been like 6 months or a year since I've taken a look.
Okay. If I had to choose right now, it would very easily be a Google Pixel.
Not one of those like Samsung foldables, no.
I do not like Samsung. Like for phones, I find what happens with Google, what's nice, is you get the Android updates right away. That's the other advantage Apple has, which should be something that should be a problem on the other end, is that, guess what? You get Apple security updates day and date. Same thing with Google on their Google Pixels. But Samsung and stuff is notoriously slow with that because they have their own little fork of Android.
Yeah, exactly. Which is not... it's not ideal. It's not ideal. Let's put it that way. Definitely but at not. The same time, like, you know, there are pluses and minuses to having a more open ecosystem versus a controlled ecosystem as it comes to the apps and features on your phone, which is understandable. Last thing I want to talk about, though, is smartwatches, right? So one of the other parts of the lawsuit is that non-Apple smartwatches can't talk to iPhones properly.
That's not necessarily true. My kids had Fitbits before they got their Apple watches, and my daughter used to get text messages on her Fitbit. I don't think she could answer them on their Fitbit, though, because
can't respond.
Yeah, but that was more Fitbit's thing than Apple, no? Or is there no API available?
It seems like there is some reluctance on Apple's part to open up the API to non smartwatch people. To non Apple smartwatch people.
I think it's rare to see somebody with a smartwatch that has an iPhone that their smartwatch is not an Apple Watch. That is very rare.
I know a couple of people.
I know a couple of people too. But in terms of how rare it is, it's pretty rare. Like, I mean, I had two in my house that did that, right?
I
wouldn't call their Fitbit smartwatches. Right. They were just like the older type Fitbit. But they are much happier with their Apple Watches, I must say.
My suggestion to people out there using one of those, just forget it. Forget about the concept of time. Forget it. And with that, Angela, let us move on over to the paranormal side of things.
Great.
Rod! Builds the pyramids.
Rod!
Builds the Parthenon.
Rod!
Builds America.
Rod!
This is your song. Thank you.
Rod!
Thank you.
Rod!
Rod! This is your song, thank you.
Welcome back to Double Density. As always, we're switching gears from tech to the paranormal. So this week, I want to talk about a thing that a couple people pinged me about that I already knew was on the horizon. That is the results of the 2023 Canadian UFO survey. So let's put it this way. Great news all around. Congrats to Quebec. We did it again. Montreal is the largest urban center with reported sightings, right? So 42 this year in 2023, and then Toronto had 30. So we did it, Angela. There was a total of 570 reports throughout Canada.
Why do we think that in Canada, Quebec has such a high margin? And it's not like even by a little bit, right? Like our population is the second highest. Is it the second highest in the country, right? Yeah. And we're still way ahead in terms of the other provinces, including Ontario, which has, I think, double our population.
Mm-hmm.
So
I have
impressive.
A crazy theory that will not bear any like shred of like reality here. But are you ready for this?
I want to hear it.
Okay.
I want to hear
so
it.
So do you know the concept of Balconville?
Yeah.
So the idea of people sitting out on their balconies in Montreal is like a huge thing, right? It's a huge part of it.
Well, yeah, Montreal has like the outside balconies, even in the front with the staircases on the outside. They were known for that.
Yes. So what I'm saying is Balconville culture has enabled people to spend more time looking up at the stars. Think about that for a sec.
I don't disagree, actually.
Because I still know tons of people who love to sit on their balcony and like read or talk or play music. Like, I wish I had a balcony. I miss it, you know, because I've had a couple apartments with like some pretty good balconies and I miss that.
We have a deck in the back, which we've recorded a podcast from there several years ago. And I have a front porch. I don't tend to sit outside that much because there's a lot of mosquitoes here.
Well, I was going to say, you're also like a demon in a cave. You're a cave dweller, which is the bigger
issue. We get destroyed by mosquitoes here. It is awful. But I do like sitting outside on my deck. It's quite nice to be able to look at the stars. July especially, where the evenings are warmer.
Mm-hmm. Do you need to put like saxophone music on? Like, what do you play?
Yeah, I have those speakers that are disguised as rocks out there.
No, but I'm serious. Like, what is it, like, do you have a playlist to put on for stargazing? Like, anything?
No, not at all. Just sit there. Like, usually we're with other people.
Are you okay, if you're with other people, you're not disassociating then.
No. My daughter likes to go read outside. Like, even when it gets colder, she likes to just sit out there and read and then come back in.
Yeah, she's a smart lady.
Yeah, she likes reading.
So anyways, back to the report, right? So 570 UFO reports were officially filed in Canada. And by officially filed, it means that they were a form was filled out on one of these websites for one of the non-governmental organizations that, you know, these volunteer corps of people who collect this kind of stuff.
I noticed there was two peaks in the months when there are the most sightings.
Yes, so February and August 2023.
Which also coincides with the 2 months that have meteor showers. So I
interesting.
I think a lot of these may be meteor showers, especially August, right? August has the Perseid meteor shower, and that's when we see a lot of weird stuff in the sky, and it's because it's meteors. So I think there may be a bit of...
There's a correlation there, let's say.
There's a definite correlation with meteor showers. And meteors can be super weird when you see them. I've seen fireballs in the sky of meteors just coming through the atmosphere. It's really cool to see because there's like sparks behind them. So you wonder, what are you looking at?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Something interesting to note, too, is that the most common type, obviously, is the nocturnal light or a light source in the sky, not even a shape, just something around, right? But something I wanted to talk about very quickly, though, is that there were more C4 encounters than there were CE3 encounters.
Yeah, how does that even work?
So there are more abductions than sightings of alien beings, which I found very interesting. Of like, I don't know, like, I'd love to read more of those, I guess.
Lots of people with sleep paralysis.
Yeah, so 44.2% of cases were nocturnal lights just hanging out in the sky. You know, meteors, right? Meteors, satellites. Satellites are another big one. Yeah. And we keep throwing satellites up into the sky.
Yeah, there's so much in the sky. The other day I was driving. Did I tell you about this? The weird three airplanes I saw?
You did not.
I went for a walk, and I saw a white airplane. Relatively low, which is actually odd in my area. And then when I turned the corner, it kind of moved in a different place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, did I misjudge where I was looking? No, it was a second white airplane flying low as well over me. And then I said, wouldn't it be weird if I saw a third? And guess what? I turned the corner and saw a third white airplane. Now, there's a few explanations. It could be a glitch in the matrix.
Correct.
It could be an issue with the simulation, or more likely, there was an issue at the airport where they had to put airplanes in a holding pattern.
Okay, so my question to you is, any missing time?
No missing time. I got back in time for my afternoon work time. This was my lunchtime walk.
I was going to ask because of the fact that March 20th was Alien Abduction Day, so I was just kind of curious if maybe there's something hiding behind what's going on here.
March 10th was Mario Day.
So 10th and 20th, yeah. You know, we're just progressing, right? Would it surprise you, Angela, to know that the most reported color of a UFO was white at like almost 50%?
Well, because the lights in the sky are usually white.
Correct. Interesting to know that like most of these cases were seen by one person.
Not just one guy making all these
reports.
No,
yeah, like not...
Seeing...
One mastermind filling out forms day in, day out. No, this is literally like... It's like most of these sightings were reported with one person present. I think that's the better way of saying it.
Yeah, and oftentimes that's how it is. You can't take out your phone because lights in the sky, if they're pinpoints of light, your phone will do nothing.
Exactly. It'll just...
No matter if you have one of those premium fancy iPhones.
Performance phones.
A performance phone. Although, did I send you the picture of the moon that I managed to take with my performance?
No, but I have one too I got to show you. So
I will send it to you later, and it's quite impressive. Yeah.
Did you see the man in the moon?
I did not, but I saw the face.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean, that's like half the battle. Another interesting facet to know too is that the average sighting lasted about 16 minutes, which is up from 2022's 13 minutes in duration.
That's a really long time for something to be hanging out in the sky.
I agree. Also, would it surprise you that between the hours of like midnight and 2-ish, I'd say, 2 a.m. are like the most common time to see things. Shouts out to people who aren't seeing things, unlike you, during your lunchtime.
Yeah, in daytime, right? Like, yeah. That's even more special.
Like, the 9 o'clock hour is definitely, like, the dead zone for seeing things.
I'm surprised it's not more close to sundown, because that's when I see the most interesting stuff happen with airplanes, where I know I'm seeing an airplane, but it sort of, like, disappears because of the way the sun reflects off of it. Very neat, actually.
Yeah, so the peak usually hits around 10 p.m. and then lasts until about, like, 1-ish, and it's a sharp decline. I'd be curious to know. In Montreal, bars close at 3. I'd be curious to know whether or not there's, like, some correlation there between the 3 o'clock hour and reporting settings.
Some people a little too drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing certain lights.
Let's talk shapes for a sec, though. So the most popular shape is, like, a dot. It's like a, you know, just a point source.
I get upset when I think about UFO shapes, and I'll tell you why. They used to be much more varied. We've talked about this with Rob, but, like, there were so many amazing descriptions of shapes, right? For, like, number one on the list, the saucer, right? Like, flying saucer.
The saucer, the cigar, the triangle.
The egg.
The egg. That was, all this going down.
Really fun. Like, when it's an egg-shaped thing, and then these vaguely-looking Italian guys come out, and they give you pancakes.
Then you want that.
Actually, can't remember if his UFO was an egg-shaped UFO, but I know they were vaguely Italian-looking.
Okay, Angela, I'm going to read a couple of things here about different shapes, right? So 48% point of source. Irregular at 17%. That's the second highest. I'd be very curious to know what that's all about. Rectangles are 1%. Round, 6. Spheres, 6. Triangle, 5%. Boomerang, 1. Your buddy the cigar, 4. Disc, 3. Fireball, 5. Oval, unfortunately, is only 4%.
See, like, yeah, egg shapes are the best.
Yeah. And also there's a very interesting lens in which these reports are judged. And that is the average strangeness rating, right? Which I find very
love
interesting.
This. Yeah. I loved seeing this, and this fascinated me that there
was I thought it was a really interesting scale. Way of, like, of calculating things.
Until I saw the average, and I was kind of, like, disappointed, but it's still good.
Right, so it's a 1-9 scale, 9 being, like, how many odd features of the entire experience going on. 1 being like, I saw a street lamp, right? 9 being like, to CE4, I kissed an alien. It was okay.
I love the explanation of the 9. It
was
great.
Yeah. Because that's basically what it is. So it's an average of 4.
Which, okay, you know what? Makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously, like, it has
a 4 for you. Yeah. What would be a 4 for you?
A 4 would be like, it moved oddly. I cannot explain it. I can kind of make out a shape, but not 100% because it's still so far away.
Because, for like, yeah, a 4 would be that exactly. Like, more than, like, a pinpoint of white light, but less than that a solid-looking object somewhere in the sky.
Yeah, exactly. And something that the UFO survey people noted is that this one and the next section we'll be talking about are, like, kind of like bell curve-shaped if you take a look. And, of course, this will be in the show notes. So if you want to flip through this PDF, you by all means can. And then
it seems long, but it's actually
There's actually, like,
concise.
Actually a much longer – the full survey is available for people.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't realize this was, like,
This is basically a summation, right? Because
I love
press release.
This is perfect. Yeah. Nice bite-sized UFO thing.
Angelo hates reading, even though he says he reads every night before bed.
I am reading the UFO book by Garrett Graff. It's excellent. I actually ordered a different one of his books, too.
Oh, did you really?
It was funny because I'm watching Turning Point, which is a history of the Cold War on Netflix, which is really fun to watch. Well, fun. It's not fun. It's great, though. It's an entertaining watch. And in that first episode, who's there? Garrett Graff.
Oh, amazing. Okay.
Yeah. And he wrote a book called Raven Rock, which is how the U.S. basically planned for doomsday and left everybody out except them, except, like, the government.
Yep.
So I've ordered that book and we'll be reading it soon.
I have a trilogy of books by this guy. And I was at Indigo, which is a book chain here in Canada, with a friend of mine the other day. And we were just talking about, like, the aesthetics of books, right? Especially the new agey kind of stuff. And she's very mad at the tarot and tequila style of, like, this is how we talk about card reading. She's like, I want the cover where it's like Comic Sans, you know, like janky. I want the janky cover because I feel like it's true, right? So with that in mind, I picked up a series of books, the Esoteric Trilogy by a guy named Brad Olson. So if you want to take a look at the cover here, Angela, look at this thing.
Oh, boy.
Modern Esoteric, right?
Yeah, lotus position.
And he wants to talk about he in this book will unmask government held secrets, mass media disinformation, and shady corporate and Big Brother activities, and why we should know who they all are. So that is the first of three. There's Modern Esoteric, Future Esoteric, and Beyond Esoteric: Escaping the Prison Planet.
Prison Planet.
I know, Alex Jones style.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to the UFO survey results.
But people listen to our show for the tangents we take.
That's correct. Yeah. So we talked about bell curves for the string tracker, and now we're talking about bell curves for the reliability of UFO reports. So just under a 5, which to them means that they were submitted, like we said at the beginning, mostly submitted through a form on a website somewhere, not investigated thoroughly.
Something we didn't touch on earlier when we talked about how Quebec has some of the highest reports of UFOs is that we do have our own actual UFO reporting center here.
Correct.
That's relatively well known. I guess I didn't know about it.
L'Association Québécoise d'Ufologie.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that one. There's a National UFO Reporting Center, which is New Fork. There's the BC one. Also Transport Canada and UFOlogy
that's neat.
Research. Yeah.
I'm surprised that the Quebec one uses the word ufologie when the word for UFO is of knee.
Yeah.
Have they changed that? Just like in English, we've changed it to UAP?
Well, okay, so that is another interesting part of the report where they talk about the nomenclature, right? Where they're like, UFO's been around for a while, we're just going to keep using it. Never mind, this, like, obviously I'm paraphrasing and it's not the truth about what they're saying. They put it much more diplomatically, but they're basically saying, like, this is just noise. The calling it UAP is noise.
UFO is such a better term.
I agree.
Like, I just think, I understand why they've changed it because of the connotations of alien visitation, and they want to make sure that people know this isn't necessarily alien. This could be a foreign body from like another country saying that they are much higher in terms of technology, but who knows?
I agree with you. Also, something to note, I think is the most important thing, is that ultimately only a certain percent of all of these reported encounters or sightings are actually classified as unexplained, which I thought was like very interesting to me. Is just like 6% of everything, all of these 570 reports, only 60% remain unexplained, right? After a careful scrutiny of all the different forms that got filled out, all the different experiences, and perhaps in some cases a bit of follow-up being done. So I found that was like very interesting that like such a small percentage, which is kind of in line with what we've seen before. And then they're saying that like 47% of these have probable explanations. So that's 50% at the very least, if not more. And I imagine if they were investigated, that'd probably get boosted up even more.
Yeah, there's no time to investigate all these things either, right? There's no investigators. In Quebec, we have to spend money on people investigating signs
and languages.
But we don't have time for UFOs.
What I was thinking would be an interesting novel way of getting some government money is a government arts grant to study this.
Huh.
Through the
not
like
a
the
science
use of,
one.
Yeah, like oh no, not even that, just arts through the production of like a media, right? So either a book, a podcast series, et cetera, et cetera. So there is money to be get out there.
For our podcast.
I don't have the 30 hours it takes to like properly.
That's way too long. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have full-time jobs.
Yeah. So of course, at the bottom, there's some extraordinary UFO sightings, including one.
So many in Quebec.
And one in particular, Angela, that you highlighted, but I highlighted for a different reason.
Yes. I said, of course, there's one in Verdun. Verdun is where Brian used to live, and it is it's becoming gentrified.
It is gentrified.
Oh, it is now. Yeah. Okay. But it used to be known as the like almost sort of hillbilly.
Well,
part
I mean, okay. So let's put it this way. One of the nicknames for a while was Verdump, right? Which makes sense. We were back there back in the day.
Well, like there used to be a scene in Verdun thing. And something I remember seeing in Verdun when a friend of ours lived there is that her neighbors across the street had a mattress as a door.
Yes. Yes.
A mattress as a door.
So this was translated. So I'm going to read the English one first, and I'm going to talk about a very important thing that was left out of the translation. So this one is from May 14th, 2023, around 10:15 p.m., and it's entitled Loud UAP with Bright Reactors Flew Over Witness in Quebec. Quote, I first saw a little light in the clouds, which moved very slowly from south to north. Then for 4 seconds, I saw it pass from one cloud to another. The back of the craft had 3 fireballs, one next to the other, resembling 3 reactors hiding fire. It sounded heavier than a military plane, and what impressed me most was its speed, which was way too slow to be a plane or a helicopter. A loud machine noise was heard while it was in sight. So, a couple of things to note. So, I pulled up the full report from OVNI Expire, and a couple of things got forgotten here, Angelo. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
So, this dude was trying to sleep, and then he heard loud noises. And he decided to go outside.
Before 10, good job.
He decided to go outside, but Angelo, this is the best part. He was just like, yo, I'm going to... He smoked a cig while watching this go down. He had a ciggy watching this reactor filled.
Was it a regular CD? UFO.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and so he's just talking about how he forgot his cell phone inside Earl Teal's. He went to take a picture, but he goes outside to smoke, trying to figure out where the noise is coming from. That's when the description that was translated happens.
Of course, he forgot his cell phone inside.
Yeah, and they said he was a little perturbed, and he doesn't know it because it wasn't an airplane and it wasn't a helicopter. But he said it must have been enormous.
I don't know. It could be like it could be anything. Something I forgot to mention is that the February spike, they attributed it to the balloons being shot down.
But that's not, in the States, though.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But like, yeah. it made news everywhere, right? So I still think it was the meteor showers. Because I literally looked up months with most meteor showers, and February and August came up. But May, what could this be? I mean, it could be a military thing. Have you ever been anywhere near like a military aircraft flying in the sky?
Yes.
Is it not super odd looking compared to what you're used to seeing in the sky?
Yes, I agree with you. But I also knew that exactly what they were versus like seeing one out in the wild. So I think there's a bit of bias there of me knowing that this was going on.
Yeah, that's true.
Something to note too, something that made me laugh is, so we have the Trans-Canadian Highway, right? The 401 that for some reason turns into the 20 here, then becomes the 401 again. I love the description of the title of this one. UAP, like, quote-unquote, dinner plate flew over a highway, right? So the 401, someone was hanging out in the Greater Toronto region. An unusual object was flying above Highway 401 during rush hour. I thought it was a bird, but it flew seamlessly. Then I thought it must be a drone. As it got closer, I couldn't understand what it was. Then I thought, maybe it's a plastic bag blown by the wind. There was no wind.
So beautiful.
And this seemed to move under control. I forget it once it flew by. I could see what type of drone it is as it flew by. There was no backing. Only a small hump at the back. The only item I could compare it to was that of a dinner plate, but flying horizontally, but in a vertical position. I was driving west. This was flying east. So just imagine you're fed up. Have you ever driven the 401 around Toronto?
Yeah.
Especially like not even rush hour. Like just in general, there's always gridlock.
Yeah, and you fly literally under an airplane pretty often there. They fly really close.
Yes. Well, especially, yeah, because Toronto Island's right there, right? Shout out to one of my favorite airports of all time. So sorry for that, Pearson, but you can go to hell. Anyways, that being said, you're sitting in gridlock, you're sitting in traffic, you're fed up, you're listening to your TSN talk radio, you know, whatever. Two guys are arguing about hockey or whatever, and then suddenly a dinner plate flies by.
That's pretty cool.
The only thing that is unfortunate is that there's not like an apt description of like size of it. That's what I was wondering, right?
It's the size of a dinner plate.
No, but I meant like, is it how far away was he? Like this person, like I'm very curious to know.
And that's the problem with UFO sightings is you can't really judge. And the problem with most UFO pictures is that there's no context for anything.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't, there's no point of like respective size in those cases, right?
Yeah.
One last thing to note is that over the last 34 years that people have been conducting these surveys, over 24,000 Canadian UFO reports have been collected. Just imagine, collected and cataloged. So that's a vast amount of information, right? So imagine you ran that through some machine learning algorithms and started asking it questions. Like, what would that look like? I'd be very curious to know.
That'd be awesome, actually. I'd like to see that.
The only use of AI, a generative AI, is I'd say like make me charts of this, right?
Yeah, and it's funny, in research that I was doing for the tech segment before the DOJ thing came up, I didn't realize, but Gemini now, I can actually use it here in Canada.
Yes. Yeah, it came out not long ago, not even?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was previously known as Bard.
Yeah, we got that. We got access to that at work magically one day, and we're like, oh, this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I feel like these kinds of surveys are always a blast to look at and to think about and to sort of, you know, ruminate over. But I feel like this is a good place to end episode 264 of the Double Density Podcast. So before we go, Angela, where can people find us if they want to report their own UFO? If you want to call it UAP, you can. We'll let you do it. So anyways, where can people go to let us know about their UFO reports?
On doubledensity.net, you have access to a form you can fill out. Let us know your UFO report on there, and we'll take a look at it. It'll come to us by email, and we'll have a look and talk about it on the show. We'd love to hear your UFO reports, whether it's in Canada or anywhere in the world.
Double NC Podcast over on Instagram, also over on Threads, which I'm posting on sparingly. And if you want to go ahead and just keep on following us, keep on keeping on. Anyways, this has been it for episode 264 of the Double Density Podcast. Tune in next week as Angela and I decide to set up our own UFO reporting mechanism that's just basically Angelo re-downloading the ICQ app and posting his ICQ number everywhere.
I think we'll spend most of the time arguing if we should call them UFOs or UAPs.
I think a flip of the coin would make the most sense there.
Yeah.
Keep watching the skies.